Hello, everybody. Welcome in to another fantastic edition of Overtime on this fine Wednesday. I will be your host, Cole McCormick, the usual producer. But since our fearless leader, Tanner Carson, is out for the rest of the week, he asked me to take the reins, and of course I obliged. It's hard being a company man, but it is a burden I must bear. I am not alone, however. With me, Julia Ramsey and intern Matt, a.k.a. Matt White, are with me.
Yeah, yeah.
How are we doing, everybody?
Doing pretty good.
I'm doing all right. Hanging in there.
Hey, that's all we need.
Yep.
That's all you can ask for.
Yep.
I've already said it, but Julia, can you go ahead and remind us what day it is?
It is Wednesday, my dudes.
Oh, yes, it is Wednesday, my dudes and dudette. It is hump day. Favorite time of the week in a way. Half of the week's over. Just another half to go until the weekend again. So always fun. I don't know if you two saw it. I definitely did. And I wanted to get some thoughts on it. You know, as of late, the last few years, it seems that Tennessee, the football team, has had a lot of retirees. And no, I'm not talking about you know, men that have been around forever. I'm not talking about the older guys that when you retire between your 60s and 70s and or later. I'm talking about young men between the ages of 18 and 22. I can't remember all of the names, but off the top of my head, Jack Jones is one. Let's see. Who's another one? What was the kid with the long hair, the offensive lineman? His name is escaping me. I can't remember, but he retired too. But today, another Tennessee offensive lineman has announced that he is retiring from football. But interestingly enough, he just got to campus just, I believe, last week or two. One of the new freshmen in this recruiting class, Melvin McBride, has announced that he is retiring from football. So I don't know where the injury occurred. You would think it would had to have been in high school since he hasn't done anything at UT, but you never know. But he is done. According to his Twitter, he tweeted out the statement earlier today. He said, "Today I have officially announced my retirement from football due to health problems. I would just like to say that football has changed my life and blessed me in ways I could never imagine. And now God has a new journey for me." 100 emoji, hashtag 60 forever. What do y'all think about this? Is there something that is just plaguing Tennessee right now? Do we only get linemen that are only going to play a year, or in Melvin's case, never?
It seems so. It seems like we do not have good luck with this recently, and it's so unfortunate for him because, like you said, he hadn't even gotten here. Well, he just got here, and he hasn't even played yet.
I feel like he just moved in a couple days ago, and now he's done.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be the most devastating news he's probably ever gotten.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a real shame because he was a three-star. You know, he has some talent, and he didn't even get a chance. You know,
yeah.
It really sucks that someone has to get injured. And like you said, we've had a bunch of people. I'm reading this article, this SB Nation article, and we've had three other offensive linemen retire due to medical reasons this year. Tanner.
Antonutti.
Antonutti,
yeah. Yeah, I forgot he did as well. Yeah.
Eric Crosby and Chance Hall.
Chance Hall, that's who I was thinking of, yeah.
Yep.
And then Jack Jones just a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So five in a matter of three, four years.
Yep.
Yeah, of course, it's probably just a coincidence. But when you get more than one or two, when you get up to five, it's kind of starting to think, is something going on over there? Do we know how to take care of our bigger men?
Yeah.
Do we know what we're really doing? Now, in his case, I'm sure it was coming out of high school. Like we said, maybe he's, you know, worked out with the team a couple of times, but he hadn't done any practices, any hitting while he's been at UT. They haven't started that yet. So it had to have been from his high school days, which leads me to my next question. Do you think, one, the coaches knew about his injury, and two, do you think he didn't tell anybody just so he could keep his scholarship spot? Because Jeremy Pruitt did say that even though he is retiring from football and he has not done anything at UT yet, he is still keeping his scholarship. So do you think this maybe was a way of him cheating the system for a better lack of words? What do you think?
I mean, I think there had to have been something in high school that would have caused him, you know, he had to have some kind of issue.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do I think he was necessarily hiding from it or hiding it from the UT staff? I wouldn't think so. I feel like we would do enough background on him
mm-hmm.
to know if he was capable of playing or not.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like something had to have happened within the time that he's been here
mm-hmm.
since he got the scholarship. So, yeah, I really hope he wasn't hiding it because that would really suck.
So do you think it did happen up here in Knoxville, even though he's been here for about a couple weeks at the most? Or do you think it was a high school-related injury or maybe even an injury outside of football? I mean, we really don't know what it is.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think, like I said, there has to be something that happened in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there had to have been some type of injury.
Mm-hmm.
And then he, like you said, he's been here but hasn't done anything.
Yeah.
So he had to have aggravated it somehow. I'm thinking it has to be, or it most likely has to be non-football related,
mm-hmm.
which makes this suck even more. But
yeah, I mean, but in a way, as a fan and even as the coaches over there, you don't want anybody being hurt. But if somebody's going to be hurt like him, a new freshman coming in, you kind of hope it is a non-football injury, because if he was injured through high school and then was signed to a team and then a week, 2 weeks later announces that he is not doing any more football, but he is still using that scholarship, you would kind of hope it wasn't football related. You would kind of hope that it was just him, you know, some kind of freak accident, something that has happened since he signed. You hope that it wasn't something that has been nagging him for a while, and taking up a scholarship spot on this on the team. I mean, that's my opinion. I could be completely wrong, but if I'm a coach, I'm kind of hoping, man, I hope this didn't happen in high school, because for one, if I was a coach, I would kind of feel like an idiot.
Yeah.
For not knowing his medical history, yeah. Giving him a scholarship, and then him not even playing a down for my team. I mean, that's just my opinion. But yeah, he's done. Let's see here. Patrick Brown over at 247 put out an article on Mr. McBride earlier. Mr. Brown, let's see. He starts off by saying the career of one of Tennessee's newest players appears to be ended just 2 weeks after it started. Freshman offensive lineman Melvin McBride announced on Twitter Wednesday morning that he is retiring from football due to, quote, health problems. Whitehaven coach Rodney Salisbury initially confirmed the news to GoVols 247 Ryan Callahan late Wednesday morning, and the Vols officially confirmed McBride is taking a medical retirement early Wednesday afternoon. McBride, a former three-star prospect out of Whitehaven High School in Memphis, was one of 12 players who joined the Vols as summer enrollees. He moved to campus to begin his career on May 28th for the start of summer classes and summer workouts. Tennessee's coaching staff was high on the potential for the 6'2", 319-pound McBride, who's only played 2 years of football and was set to play guard at Tennessee. McBride was ranked as the 446th overall player, number 29 offensive guard, and ninth best player in Tennessee for the 2019 class, according to 247 Sports. And then it kind of goes on a couple of longer quotes. So, unfortunate for him, unfortunate for Tennessee. I don't know. I don't want to think it's a Tennessee thing entirely, just because he is a freshman. He just got to campus 2 weeks ago. So it's nothing you would think happened here in Knoxville. But, I mean, it's kind of starting to make me think we might need to get somebody that knows how to take care of the human body that's bigger than your average person. Because mm-hmm. it only seems to happen to the big offensive linemen. Yeah. Not even the defensive linemen. The offensive linemen and whatever, you know, if it's their knees, their back, their neck, you know, whatever it is, it kind of seems like we don't know how to take care of these guys. Outside of him, you know, we talked about it, Tanner Antonutti, Jack Jones, Chance Hall, and one other guy. They all had just freak injuries in a way, but injuries that probably could have been prevented. So I don't know what Tennessee needs to do moving forward, but apparently whatever they're doing isn't working out.
Yeah, it's. I mean, if it's two people, it can be considered a coincidence. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there's five.
Yeah.
Like you said.
Yeah.
So. I feel like there has to be some kind of correlation.
Yeah,
that.
I think so too. Yeah. Which, I mean, I think you can kind of chalk up everyone outside of Antonutti in a way on the Butch Jones staff. I mean, I'm sure we know he had no idea what he was doing. I'm sure the people he hired as far as trainers, doctors, medical staff, for the most part, didn't know what they were doing. But when it comes to McBride, it is – kind of its own issue, since, you know, he is right out of high school. He just got to campus on the 28th. So I don't know what to think, but it is interesting. I don't know what they need to do. It could just be a coincidence. Like, we could just be looking into it a little too much. But after the fifth guy, and I'm sure there's going to be another guy. I mean, there's no signs of stopping. I mean, you look at Trey Smith, all the medical problems he's had. We'll get to him a little bit later, but you look to a guy like him, you know, the blood clots in his lungs, he could be another guy to retire. You look at Brandon Kennedy, the center from Alabama, he gets hurt on the first play last year, even though he's set to play this upcoming season. You never know what could happen there. So it doesn't look like there's a guarantee that it's going to stop for Tennessee, and I don't know what they need to do different. I really don't, but they need to figure something out. So, yeah, definitely sucks for Mr. McBride. I'll read a little bit more of this article. Let's see. Here was 247's evaluation of him from high school, according to Greg Biggins. Greg says, a road grader of an interior lineman and one of the most physical guards in the region, long arms for a 6'3 guard and can physically overwhelm an opponent when he gets his hands on them. Powerful upper body and manhandles opposing tackles at the point of attack, has quick feet, a strong base, and does a nice job getting into his pass sets. And then he goes on for a lot longer than I thought he would, so I won't finish. But the rest of the article says, McBride was part of a five-man signing class on the offensive line for Tennessee, which also added five-star tackles Wanya Morris and Darnell Wright, four-star center Jackson Lampley, and three-star Chris. I'm not even going to try to say his name. I've messed it up too many times. I'm not going to try again in the 2019 class. Morris enrolled early in January and went through spring practice earlier this offseason. Tennessee picked up a commitment from a 2020 guard prospect over the weekend in Mammoth, Jaquez Spraggins, a three-star prospect out of Illinois who could possibly come in and replace McBride. So, sucks for him, sucks for Tennessee, sucks for Coach Pruitt. You know, from a scheme standpoint and a player standpoint as of this season, I don't think anybody thought he was going to play a whole lot.
Yeah.
I don't think this really changes anything. Just moving forward, I mean, he has the size to be a SEC guard, 6'2", 319. He's plenty big to play that. So maybe down the road it could possibly hurt Tennessee. We'll have to wait and see. But it sucks for him for sure. Never want to see anybody retire, especially that young, from something they love doing.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to wait and see what his future holds. I'm sure, you know, it seems like all these guys that retire become either a grad assistant, some kind of player development while they're still in school or whatnot. So I'm sure he will have some role on the team moving forward, but we will have to see how that turns out. Let's see. Let's go ahead and take the first break of hour number one. Coming up, we'll talk about Tennessee's first opponent this season, Georgia State. Point spread has been released. Talk a little bit about that. We'll also talk about Trey Smith, update his injury, his treatment, and everything that's been going on with him. And a whole lot more the rest of the show. So stick around. Don't change the dial and or the app, however you're listening, because we are in for a great show. You are listening to Overtime on Fox Sports Knoxville.
I'm going down. Welcome to the Space Jam. Here's your chance. Do your dance at the Space Jam. All right. All right.
All right, before the break, I told you we will get into point spread for Tennessee's first opponent, Georgia State. I believe it came out last week, but no real information on it or analysis. So we will mention it today. Let's see. 247 has a piece out about it. They entitle it, Vols open as big favorite in 2019 opener against Georgia State. Tennessee has opened as a more than 3-touchdown favorite in its 2019 season opener against Georgia State. I would kind of think so. The Vols start out as a 25-point favorite against the Panthers, according to opening week lines released by the Westgate Superbook. The game at Neyland Stadium on August 31st will kick off at 3:30 p.m. Eastern and will be televised on ESPNU. You know, now think about it, we did talk about it because we talked about when was the last time Tennessee played on ESPNU, and it was, I can't remember exactly, but it was a while ago. I want to say Butch's first year maybe, so what, 2012? No, not 2012. Was it 2014, 13?
I think it was 14.
Yeah.
His first year?
2013 and 14, somewhere in there.
I don't know, but it was way back. Let's see, they go on to say, this will be the second all-time meeting between Tennessee and Georgia State, which lost 15-13 in its previous visit to Neyland Stadium in 2013 in the program's final season in the football championship subdivision. Since then, the Panthers have overcome an 0-12, 12-1, and 11 season in the first 2 years in the Sun Belt Conference to play in a pair of bowl games. Georgia State recorded its first bowl game win by beating Western Kentucky in the Cure Bowl to close 2017. The Cure Bowl?
Hmm.
Have y'all heard of that?
No. I have not.
Is that real?
Yeah, I've never
apparently
heard of that.
The C-U-R-E, the Cure Bowl.
The Cure Bowl.
Okay. However, the Panthers dropped to 2-10 last season and will be looking to bounce back in 2019, Georgia State's third season under Sean Elliott, the former South Carolina offensive line coach and interim head coach. They go on to say Tennessee likewise will be looking for improvement on the field and in the win column during its second season under Jeremy Pruitt, whose first Tennessee team pulled upsets on top 25 Auburn and top 15 Kentucky before ultimately coming up one win short of a bowl game in 2018. Georgia State loses top wide receiver Penny Hart, who signed a free agent deal with the NFL's Indianapolis Colts in April, but otherwise they return all of the key pieces on offense, including dual-threat quarterback Dan Ellington, who led the Panthers in passing with 2,119 yards and 12 touchdowns and only 5 interceptions, and also in rushing, 625 yards rushing with 5 touchdowns on the ground last season. The Panthers were miserable defensively last season and will be hoping to make significant improvements after ranking 122nd nationally in points allowed, 37 per game, and 125th in total defense, and allowing at least 34 points in all of its 10 losses and at least 40 points in 5 games. So,
jeez.
I mean, I think we would all say, yeah, we're chalking this one up as a W for Coach Pruitt and company. Mm-hmm. How bad do we think it could be? I mean, because it says right here, let me go back. They allowed at least 34 points in all of its 10 losses and at least 40 points in 5 games. Now, I know the Tennessee offense the last few years with Jarrett Garantano has not been fantastic. I don't think you can put that all on him at all. But with another year under his belt, the second year of Pruitt, first year of Jim Chaney, and also working with Coach Winkie now, you would expect big things in the week one matchup. But do you think the 25-point spread is enough? Do you think it should be more? Should it be less? What's your initial reaction to the 25 points?
I feel like that's a good line where it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like 30 points, I think would be a lot. Mm-hmm. I know it's Georgia State, and they went 2-10 last year. They're atrocious, but it's still the first game. You're still kind of figuring things out.
Mm-hmm. Got to work the kinks out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if I was a betting man, and it was, I mean, I think this is a good line right now, but I'd still be a little skeptical to take the Vols. I might buy a point or something, but yeah, I think it's a good line now. I don't think they need to move it up, and unless we start, I don't know, something drastic happens, but yeah.
The whole team gets injured. The whole team has to retire in 2 weeks or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Julia, what do you think?
I think it's a good line, too.
Yeah. I'm kind of with y'all. I think 25, and that's just, let's see, that's just 25-point favorites. So it's not saying Tennessee will score 25. That's Tennessee, however much we score, however much they score, it's going to be a 25-point gap. I think that's pretty reasonable. Like you said, Matt, 30 points. If it gets to the 30-point mark, that might be a little much. I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked either. I mean, they did have one of the worst defenses last year. But on the other hand, Tennessee didn't have a great offense last year. But you would think an SEC school can beat the Sun Belt when they want. But we'll just have to wait and see. The article continues. The only wins for Georgia State last season were FCS, Kennesaw State, and Louisiana Monroe. And the Panthers lost all but 2 games by at least 16 points and were blown out in its non-Sun Belt games, losing by 34 at NC State, by 37 at Memphis, and by 19 against Western Michigan. The kickoff times and television designations all also have been set for Tennessee's second and third games. We've mentioned that, so I won't go through that. So, yeah, 25 points. I'd be fine with that.
Yeah.
Now, yes, I would like to beat them more than 25 points. It's Georgia State. We beat them, let's see, let me scroll back up here. We beat them 51-13 in 2013. I wouldn't say our offense or team was that much better than this year's team, so I would like to see a score like that again.
Mm-hmm.
But a win's a win. I'll take what I can get. The one thing I think they do have to worry about is not winning by enough, because there's always going to be the people out there, even if you win by let's just say Tennessee only wins by 10 points.
Yeah.
You're going to have people out there saying, what are we doing?
Of course.
Take out Jarrett Garantano.
Of course.
Put in Maurer. Yep. Fire everybody.
Yep.
A win's a win, but you're always going to have those people. So I think that is one thing to watch for them, which I don't think they really care. You know, all the talking heads out here can say what they want, but a win's a win.
At the end of the day, they just need a win.
As long as it's not an L, I don't really care. Now, exactly. If it is like a 7-point win, I'll kind of start to think, do we know what we're doing?
Yeah.
Do we need a change in leadership? But I don't know. But
it
we'll
is
just
the
have
first
to.
First game.
Yeah, that's another thing. First game, new offensive coordinator. Pretty much everybody, for the most part, back on offense outside of a few pieces. But we'll just have to wait and see. I'm not too worried about it. I know some people are saying another abysmal year for Tennessee. Some are saying 3-9. I don't think it's going to be that bad. Oof. That's just wanting to be sad, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But I think Tennessee will beat them handedly. So it's interesting to see that coming out, even though it came out a couple days ago, to have a little bit of analysis on it. Real quick before we hit another break, wanted to talk about Trey Smith, the big man from West Tennessee. As we all know, he has been struggling with the blood clots in his lungs.
Right.
That's not something you mess with. It's not something that's easy to come back from, something very serious. And Coach Pruitt and staff have not been taking it lightly. An update today from Coach Pruitt.
There you go.
SEC Mike, Michael W. Bratton of Saturday Down South, put out a couple tweets and also an article on Trey's status. Mr. Mike says, Pruitt on Trey Smith's status. Trey has done absolutely everything this offseason. He's in the best shape of his life. He does everything everyone on our team does except contact work. He is working hard for him to one day resume play at Tennessee, which that's what we've heard all along. But in his article, he goes more in depth. Mr. Bratton says, if Tennessee is going to take strides in year two under Jeremy Pruitt, the program's offensive line has to start coming together. While the unit may remain the biggest question mark hovering over the Volunteers program entering the 2019 season, there is some optimism that Tennessee's best player could rejoin the lineup after missing 5 games last season. By now, you likely know Smith suffered from blood clots in his lungs, which held him out for the majority of the previous offseason. And once it was discovered they had returned, Tennessee's best offensive line was shut down for the 2018 season.
Yep.
While Smith's loss was devastating to the team's offensive line last season, the main concern around the program focused on the future of arguably the best NFL prospect to play on Rocky Top since Eric Berry suited up for the Big Orange. Ooh, that's interesting. While the outlook for Smith's playing career may have been grim at one point last fall, this offseason has resulted in some momentum for the rising juniors' potential to return to the field this fall. Smith took part of practice all spring in Knoxville and even went to be listed as a, quote, projected starter on Tennessee's 2019 offensive line by the SEC Network during the broadcast of the Orange and White game. Obviously, you have to take the information with a grain of salt, but during a Wednesday appearance on Birmingham-based WJOX 94.5 FM radio program called Three Man Front, Coach Jeremy Pruitt offered up the latest encouraging update on Trey Smith. Coach Pruitt says, I think it's no secret, Trey, the situation he had last year. Pruitt said on the show, that's kind of a broken sentence. Our medical staff has done a fantastic job recognizing the situation and monitoring him through this offseason and the year to come. At a point, decided it was in his best interest to just shut him down. Trey has done everything we've asked of him this year. When we got here, he weighed 360 pounds. Now he is down to 321. Wow. So lost quite a bit of weight.
Oh, yeah.
He does absolutely everything everybody on our team does. The only thing he does not do is contact. That goes along with the medicine he is taking, and he is working hard to get back to playing for Tennessee one day. Based on the response, Smith continues to prepare himself to play football in the fall, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he will take the field for Tennessee. While Pruitt would love to have his best player on the field next fall, the decision is ultimately going to come down to the doctors and the Smith family when that time comes. Either way, there is real hope that Smith will play football again, whether it's in 2019 or 2020, and that's a reason enough to celebrate considering how dire the lineman's outlook was at one point last fall. So, based on that, do we think we will see Trey Smith, one, against Georgia State in that first game, two, kind of more, I guess, midseason, or do you think we won't see him at all? Do you think he's shut down for this year and he might just wait for his senior year to come back?
Well, the way that Pruitt's talking about him in this article and stuff, I I wouldn't be shocked if he's starting against Georgia State.
Yeah, they seem really hopeful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's a good team to start up against.
Sure.
Kind of get your bearings back and whatnot because, you know, it's Georgia State. But, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing that shocks me the most out of this article is 360 to 321.
That's a lot of weight. Yeah, working out, losing weight, you know, doing all the good things in the off season. Like, you know, they must have hope for him.
Yeah, I think so too. I think I don't know as it is right now. I don't know if I would bank on him starting game one against Georgia State. I think they're going to see. I think they want to see what they can do without him. In my opinion. Because even if he does start, there's a good possibility he won't finish the season. I mean, he only played, I believe, 6 or 7 games last year, and then he was, they had to sideline him. So I think they might start with somebody else just to see what they can do, who can step up. And then if he's good to go, throw him in there. Like the article said, he probably is the best player since Eric Berry, the best NFL player, since Eric Berry came through, which that could be debatable. I mean, we have had Alvin Kamara, Derek Barnett, and others. But Trey, especially that freshman season, he flashed a lot of potential. Mm-hmm. I do think we will see him some point this year. I don't know how soon it will be. You would hope it would be against Georgia State because he is by far the best player we have on the team and also on that offensive line. So you definitely want one of your big men in there. And then going back to him dropping all that weight, 360 down to 321. When he was 360 as a freshman, he looked like he was already set to play in the NFL.
Yeah.
And now you lose nearly 40 pounds. I would imagine he is quicker on his feet, a little bit faster, a little bit stronger in a way, I guess. I'm sure, you know, that 40 pounds was fat. Mm-hmm. So I think it would be a good thing, a good overall thing if he got to see the field this year. But at the end of the day, if his health and his life is at risk, of course they're not going to play, and we wouldn't want them to play him. We want to win, but we don't want to risk somebody's life at the same time. So hopefully he keeps taking strides, keeps getting better, and hopefully we will see him against Georgia State. We'll go ahead and take the next break of our number one. Don't go anywhere. Got a great show. We'll talk about 247. One of their riders has high hopes for Tennessee and their overall record next year. We'll get into that and the rest of the SEC on the other side. Stay right here. We'll be right back. You're listening to Overtime on Fan Run Radio, the podcast. There we go. Okay, we're on the podcast. I've forgotten it. I have forgotten it too many times. I looked over and I didn't see anything moving. I know. I didn't see anything moving. So good thing I caught that. I don't want Tanner to be mad at me. But let's see. Yeah, Mr. Brad Crawford released an article yesterday on 247 Sports website. He's predicting every SEC team's final record for the upcoming season. Mr. Crawford starts by saying, will Alabama and Georgia meet in the SEC championship for a second consecutive season, or will another nationally ranked team break into the title picture during the 2019 campaign? From the outside looking in, it sure looks like a two-team league this summer when speaking in college football playoff scenarios. LSU, Florida, and others will have opportunities to impress, but facing schedules not conducive to special seasons generates points of doubt. In terms of importance, there's 10 SEC games we're going to look at that will undoubtedly have conference championship and Final Four implications. With as many as 6 potential nationally ranked teams to open the season, the road to a title will once again come through the South and prove why the SEC is the nation's toughest league. Let's see. Sifting through every team's schedule week by week, here's a brief capsule on all 14 projected final records this season and where the potential losses could come from. He starts with Mississippi State. Now, I know we kind of combed through the records during the break, but I'm gonna see what y'all think. Where do you think he has Mississippi State starting record wise?
Hmm.
How do you think they're gonna do?
I'm gonna say at least 6-7 wins.
Okay. What do you think, Matt?
I'm going with Jules too.
Okay, y'all are both correct. Yeah. A little bit more. He has Mississippi State going 8-4, 4-4 in the conference.
Wow.
He says about the Bulldogs after a 4-0 start this upcoming season. He's kind of foreshadowing the Bulldogs' first loss comes at the hands of Auburn on September 28th. One projection that won't be popular with LSU fans this season is that I'm picking an upset in Starkville on October 19th. That comes a week after a loss at Tennessee.
Ooh.
muddies up most opinions on Mississippi State this season. It seems like the perfect scenario for Joe Moorhead to right the ship and get things corrected against the nationally ranked Tigers. So he has them beating LSU, but he has them losing to your Tennessee Volunteers, which I kind of agree.
I'm not mad about it.
I'm not either. Love that.
I think it's fantastic. I love his work. Love 247, and I love Brad Crawford.
Love it.
Love everything about him. We move on. Missouri Tigers are up next. How many wins, which you probably already know, how many wins do you think he gives them for this season?
I do already know, but before I...
How many did you think?
Yeah, I would have guessed probably like 5 or 6, like right at the bowl, you know, eligible record.
Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I was thinking 6 or 7.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I'm with you guys. But as I said, we combed through it during the break. He has Missouri going 9-3.
That is
overall
crazy.
I think it's ridiculous. Now, I know they have Kelly Bryant. I know they still have Derek Fooley. But at the end of the day, I don't see 9 wins. I could be wrong. I mean, I've been wrong a lot on the program, especially when it comes to Tennessee and other athletics. But Mr. Crawford says about the Missouri Tigers, by SEC standards, Mizzou has the league's most favorable slate this season. The Tigers will likely won't face a top 25 team until they travel to Athens in November and should be the betting favorites in every contest leading up to that showdown. Will it matter? Mizzou's new offense with Kelly Bryant in charge will be a key storyline to watch early. So it seems like he's giving a nod to Kelly Bryant now at Missouri. But there's a reason he got booted at Clemson. Now, I'm not saying he's a bad quarterback. He's a great quarterback. I think if he was at Tennessee, he would be the starter above Garantano. That's just an opinion. But I don't think he is anything that special. So I think it's a little too much love, but I don't know. Let's see. We move on. He moves on to Ole Miss. I won't ask y'all about this one because we all know. He has Ole Miss going 4-8 this year and 1-7 in conference play. I don't know if they're going to be that bad, honestly.
Yeah,
I mean, because they had that quarterback, Matt Corral, however you say his name, a five-star coming out of high school. They always seem to have NFL receivers. They somehow always get a big-time running back prospect as well, but he has them going 4-8, 1-7. I don't really see it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know that much about what's going on in Ole Miss, but 4-8's bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty bad. I'm kind of surprised that he had him that low.
Yeah. Let's see. I won't talk about theirs. He has Vanderbilt also going 4-8, 1-7 in conference. No real shock there.
Mm-hmm.
Losing their stud quarterback. I won't argue with that. He has Kentucky up next. He has Kentucky going even 6-6 overall and 2-6 in conference. So a much. He has Kentucky going downhill, which I think is correct. Arkansas, he has Arkansas having a much better season than last year, which it's hard to be worse than 2-10 unless you're 1-11. But he has Arkansas going 5-7 this year, 1-7 in conference play. Texas A&M, he has next 8-4, 5-3 in conference. South Carolina, the toughest schedule in the country. That's not even a joke or a jab. They definitely have the toughest schedule in the country. Texas A&M, Clemson, Alabama, Georgia, just to name a few games. So it's going to be very, very tough for them. 6-6, 3-5 overall. Up next, he has Auburn, 8-4, and 4-4 in conference. Let's see here. Florida, we talked about this one. I think it's a little much. Kind of got my blood pressure up. 10-2. He has Florida going 10-2, 6-2 in the conference. He has their most dangerous game and their toughest game as the same game at LSU, which they won down there 2 years ago. Or was it three? Was that 3 years ago? That was 3 years ago because that was our 2016.
Is that when we had a chance?
Was that 3 or 4 years ago?
Was that when we had a chance to go to the Sugar Bowl?
Yeah. No, that's – maybe it was. It was a – if Florida would have lost that game, we would have gone to Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it was 16.
Yeah. I think that was Butch's last, like, good – or not good, but not terrible year.
2016, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So 10-2 for them. Hopefully that doesn't happen. Let's see. I'll mention Tennessee last, of course. LSU's up next, 10-2 as well. He has them 6-2 in the conference. Most dangerous game for the Tigers this year, according to Mr. Crawford, is against Florida. Toughest game, of course, at Alabama. Georgia up next, 11-1. Yes, Georgia going 11-1. Most dangerous game and toughest game. Same game. They go to the Plains to play Auburn. And then, of course, Alabama, no shocker here, 12-0 and 8-0. Mr. Crawford... seeming like a little homer, but we will let it go. But let me scroll back up to Tennessee. You know, we've taken calls so far this offseason. We've heard a couple people listeners and people in media give their predictions already for Tennessee. And what we've heard or what we've been told so far has been anywhere between as low as 3-9, 4-8. Some think 5-7 again. Some a little more hopeful, 6-6, 7-5. Some crazy people want to go to 9-3, which I think is absolutely ridiculous, even though I will welcome it. But Mr. Crawford, very favorable for your Tennessee Volunteers. He has Tennessee going 8-4 and 4-4 in conference. What do we think about that? If I could promise you 8-4 right now for this upcoming season, are you taking it or are you leaving it?
Taking it.
Oh, I'm taking it.
Yeah, you have to take it.
Yeah, I mean, I would be so excited if we went 8-4.
Yeah, I agree. I'm kind of in the camp right now. I'm not as much as a pessimist than some people when it comes to the team. I do try to separate my heart from my head. I'm kind of leaning more towards that 6-6 mark.
Yeah.
I mean, some people think we're losing to BYU. Yeah, they beat number 6 Wisconsin and Camp Randall last year. I'm not paying real attention to that. Georgia State, of course, Chattanooga's a win. UAB will be tougher than a lot of people think, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
I still don't think Tennessee's losing to UAB. So you're looking at 4 wins right there. So you just need 2 conference wins. Now, I don't know where they're going to come from. I think that Mississippi State game could be a win. I think it's a swing game. I think you go ahead and chalk up at Florida and at Alabama as losses. More than likely put the Georgia game at home as a loss as well. Even though, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, they have a great team. We don't have a great team this year, but it seems when Tennessee and Georgia play outside of the last couple of years, it's always a swing game no matter who's good or who's bad. So you never know with that one. Yep. So you're looking at getting a win against Vanderbilt, Kentucky, Missouri. And let's just go ahead and throw Mississippi State in there as well. Yeah. I think 2 wins out of those, I think it's doable.
Yep.
So 6-6 right now, I think is where we're sitting at. 8-4 though, yeah. Give me 8-4. Give me 8-4. That's probably winning all 4 non-conference games and 4 conference games, which I think will be fantastic. If you do that, you beat the teams in the SEC that you're supposed to beat.
Yes.
In Vanderbilt, Kentucky, Missouri, and then it would probably have to be in Mississippi State. But yeah, 8-4. I'm with y'all. I'm taking it right now. I'm not trying to get a 9th win, even though that would be nice. If you're offering me 8-4 right now,
Sign me up.
Yeah. He says about the Vols real quick before we hit this next break. He says 8 wins for the Vols. I'm high on Tennessee's turnaround this season, and in picking the over on the preseason win total, which was set at 7. I like what Jeremy Pruitt's team returns at the skill positions and line. Play should be much improved on both sides. The toss-up games, that will sway Tennessee's season on an average to better than expected come against Mississippi State and South Carolina at home. Win both of those games in the Vols will be sitting pretty with a Florida bowl game bid. The projected losses, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, and Missouri. I agree with 3 of the 4. Yeah, Missouri is in Columbia, but you never know what Kelly Bryant will be capable of doing, but you know, that's just my opinion. So 8-4. I'm taking it right now.
Yep.
Sign me up.
Yep.
Where's the dotted line? Stamp of approval. I'm taking it right now.
Yeah.
So hopefully Mr. Crawford's right.
Yeah.
I'm hoping he's right. Let's see. 6:47. We'll go ahead and take another break. Let's see. Oh, next segment kind of snuck up on me. Mount Rushmore. I'll tell you which Mount Rushmore we're doing. I think it's interesting. We did it last year and it seemed to get a lot of feedback. So we will do it again. Switching it up a little bit here, and then much more to come in hour 2. Stick with us. You are listening to Overtime on Fox Sports Knoxville. Welcome back to Overtime. I mentioned it before. We went to break. The daily segment, one of my favorite segments during the summer, Mount Rushmore. Today, as I said, a topic we did last year that seemed to be pretty popular, got quite a bit of feedback on. Maybe because it's a little cheesy, I don't know. But we're going to do it again. Today, we're going to do the Mount Rushmore of mythical, fake kind of creatures. So, you know, you're kind of monsters, you're kind of stuff people believe in that haven't been found, stuff like that. So without further ado, Julia, hit the music. I do. I'll go ahead and start. First for me, you got to give it up to the big man, Bigfoot. It's in his name. Bigfoot, we haven't, captured one. There have been many reports throughout history. I, for one, do not believe in him or her. I'm not sure. But Bigfoot definitely makes the list. I think it's one of the more popular mythical creatures out there roaming the forests of the world. So that's definitely number one for me. Up next, we go outside of the U.S. to the Loch Ness Monster. I've always been intrigued by Nessie. I would love for that one to be real because she is an absolute unit over there in, where is that, Ireland?
Scotland.
Scotland? Somewhere over there.
I think it's Scotland.
Somewhere there over there on the island. I don't know. But she definitely makes number two. Number three for me, we stay in the water and we go to the mermaid. Not just because of Little Mermaid, but could you imagine a part human, part fish?
Pretty cool.
I would love to see that in person, especially down at the beach. Would make my vacation. And then last but certainly not least, a little more of a redneck mythical creature for me. The fourth spot has got to go to the jackalope. We just talked about the mermaid, the human slash fish, the jackalope, the rabbit slash deer. I think it's one of the best ones out there. It's just a rabbit with antlers. Who wouldn't want to have that in their backyard? Who wouldn't want to wake up and see that munching
cool.
on some clover? So that makes my four. Who wants to go next?
I'll go next.
Okay.
All right. My first one is the griffin.
Okay.
The griffin, for those who don't know, half eagle, half lion. Mm-hmm. Two pretty, you know, badass creatures, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Morphed into one. I like it. Second is the centaur. And for those who don't know what a centaur is, that would be half horse, half man. You've probably seen them in a lot of movies.
Oh, I know what a centaur is.
Oh, yeah. I always thought they were pretty cool. I also had the Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah.
It's pretty terrifying if you think about it.
It is. Very scary.
And then my last one is the mermaid.
Yeah, it has to be.
I would love, like you said, love to see a mermaid in real life. Always loved mermaids growing up.
All right. So for my four, I kind of went the way of if you're going to pick four, it's ones that you would want to have in a fight.
Okay.
Like,
protecting
you.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I went for some deadly ones. My first is the manticore. And if you don't know what a manticore is, it's a creature with the head of a human, the body of a lion, and the tail of a scorpion. And
okay.
has bat-like wings. And
okay. That we would want on our side in a fight, I think that's the top four.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the jackalope. I don't think they're doing anything for me. I love the mermaid. I don't think they're doing anything for me. Maybe Bigfoot, especially Nessie. I think if we're on the ocean and or lake over on the island, I think they're helping us out.
Oh, yeah.
But
what would you say is y'all, real quick, what would you say is y'all's favorite mythical creature of all time? If you had to just pick one.
Definitely the
Has been helping members become homeowners.
I honestly never thought I'd be able to own my own home, but I talked